Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The moment of truth has arrived. What will be the outcome of the U.S. presidential election? Will either side accept the result? And what are the foreign policy implications? Crosstalking these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babich. He is deputy foreign editor at Komsomolskaya Pravda Daily. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with George in Budapest. Well, we're down to the wire. My reflections on this campaign, it was kind of whimsical, cringy, a good dose of humor, I must admit. Only on one side, the liberals are not funny anymore. They can't laugh. Certainly can't laugh at themselves. But, you know, in toto, George, it was a campaign by the elites, most of the elites, against one man. It wasn't Democrats versus Republicans. It was about one man. Again, we saw, and this is the third election we've had about one man, and we're down to the wire. It looks like Trump has some wind in his sails. We'll see. Certainly, Kamala Harris turned out to be a complete dud. But when you have institutional power behind you, that can be enough. George?
I agree with that, Peter, because this is indeed the third consecutive election in which the Democrats, the media, the political establishment, the security state, everybody just piled on to attack Donald Trump and to seek to do whatever it can in its power to prevent him from becoming president. So remember, in 2016, it was complete, absolutely disgraceful hoax, the Russiagate hoax, for which no one has paid any price. Then we have it in 2020, the cover-up of the Hunter Biden laptop, which would have been damaging to the Biden campaign. And now we have this the attempt to present him as the reincarnation of Adolf Hitler. This is a person who Americans have been familiar with almost 50 years. Very popular reality TV show host, real estate mogul, in gambling mogul, whatever. Suddenly, he turns out to be Adolf Hitler. So they're doing whatever they can in their powers. Now, the two things that one has to keep in mind as we go into election night, which is, I think, that clearly the polls are indicating that Trump is doing a lot better than he was doing in 2016 or 2020. I mean, back then he was behind in all of the polls, in the national polls, in the battleground polls. He was behind everywhere. He has never been ahead. Here he seems to be at the very least even or even ahead of Kamala Harris. That would indicate that he's doing a lot better. And in those previous elections, they were very close. He won one closely. He didn't win the other one, also very close. But this time, it's even. So it would suggest that he's going to win this one quite comfortably. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is that there is no way that the Democrats, the political security establishments, are going to allow him to win. I mean, we just know this, that they're going to do whatever they can to prevent this from happening.
You know, Dima, George and I have had extensive conversations on this. And I've basically come to the conclusion that it doesn't really matter who wins on Tuesday or Thursday or Saturday or next month, depending on how the ballots are counted. But it's going to be the reaction to the outcome. And I think that's what is on the minds of a lot of people, because it wasn't political parties. It was tribes. This is tribal now. This is tribal warfare. And it's all going to kick into gear after the result, because as I said in my introduction, will the other side accept the outcome? Go ahead, Dima.
You're absolutely right. And I will quote the London Times here, of all the newspapers. The two parties may be miles apart ideologically, but they both apparently agree on one thing. If the other side wins, it will be the end of America. End of quote. Indeed, it's amazing, the polarization of society. Why did it happen? Well, my explanation is that the ultra-liberals, as I call the ideology, you know, the cabal surrounding Harris and Biden, most of the European politicians, ultra-liberals are masters in creating controversy, in creating conflict and strife. You know, a lot of people in the 90s, in the 2000s said that basically parties are getting so much like each other in the West. You can't tell conservatives from Labour in Britain, for example. But somehow ultra-liberals managed to create a conflict out of nothing, you know. Who in Russia and in Ukraine cared about the personality of Bandera in the 90s? It was the West which created, which supported the extremist nationalists in Ukraine. So little by little, it became a matter of life and death. You know, people are killing each other on this issue. In the same way in the United States, who cared in the 1970s about these transsexuals, transgender, whatever they you call them? These people just were there, you know. Now it's a huge issue, you know. People are ready to kill each other because of that issue. So the ultra-liberals, they plunge the world into conflict everywhere. In Europe, in the former Soviet Union, and it finally came to the United States also. So I predict that neither side will accept the results of this election. And you're absolutely right. The real game will start after the election, not during the election.
You know, George, we could, the postmortem will obviously include what were the inflection points, and I suppose we can point to a number of them. But the Biden garbage comment really kind of sums up how one side looks at the other. I may have missed it, but I don't see the right using that kind of language. That doesn't mean they don't use coarse language. It doesn't mean they don't use offensive language, but just calling, I mean, garbage is a pretty universally understood word, okay? And nobody wants to be it, all right? And I think that kind of sums it up. And it is a kind of a prelude to how the election is going to be received once the ballots have been counted.
I think that's right, and this goes back to really why does the Trump campaign arouse so much rage and so much hatred and fury, and I think it does go back to the question of the elites really have been afraid for quite a long time of popular anger over the way the economy has been handled. I mean, there's still the 2008 crash. Which there's been no real reckoning as to, you know, how that came about and all the people who paid a price for it. We've had this mass migration and the horrific effect that this has had on societies throughout the West. Who did this? Why was this done? Why was no one ever really informed about this? And then now we have these wars and, of course, the deindustrialization, these ongoing things. And then how did elites respond to this popular anger? Well, remember Barack Obama, you know, this nobody. He was a nobody that in 2008, he starts talking about people clinging to their guns and their Bibles. He was lucky, of course, that he was up against this nightmare creature, John McCain. And then, of course, we had Hillary Clinton with her, you know, half of his Trump supporters are, you know, belong to the basket of deplorables. And now we have Biden talking about garbage. And I think that it does reflect the elite's view of the masses, you know, that, you know, who are they? Why do they complain? You know, we know much better than they do what needs to be done. And I do think that that's really why whatever Trump did in office, Trump does pose a threat to the established order. You never know what he's going to do.
I think it's a sensibility, because I agree with everything you're saying, but because The middle class has been essentially decimated. We have unbridled foreign wars again, but they would rather talk about people being garbage and deplorables. It doesn't talk about the core issues. I mean, it's fighting over virtue signaling, okay? I mean, and I think that's why a lot of people are becoming more and more disillusioned, particularly minorities in the Democratic Party. What have you done for me lately? You know, and this goes to Dimit, the issue that you often bring up on this program. It's very ideological. It's really demand to control a narrative, but not necessarily outcomes for average people.
You're absolutely right. The outcome for average people is going to be bad for the reason which George has mentioned. There is no reckoning. I mean, these people accuse us of what about it, you know, that when Westerners criticize our election, we say, what about what happened in Moldova, where you basically saw the West directly interfering in the election? What about the fact that the Maidan so-called revolution was actually a violent coup openly supported by the direct presence of U.S. officials and European officials in Kiev? You know, imagine you would have protest marches in Washington and someone from the Kremlin would come there, you know, or someone from the foreign ministry. That would have been a huge scandal. But the Americans allowed this to themselves. So since there is no reckoning, since there is always this let's move on attitude, we have this problem. You know, the masses feel disillusioned and left alone. Polarization is based on what you just described, you know, the two sides calling each other garbage, using all sides, all kinds of abusive language. And what is very worrisome is that really terrible, scary things are taken as normal. Look, during the last 2 months, two assassination attempts against one of the candidates, former president, by the way. You have basically a totally new electoral system. You have things that would have triggered a revolution just a few years ago. Now this is all accepted. This is, you know, this let's move on attitude is prevalent. And that's what is scary because, I mean, look, if Harris comes to power, what is the chance of ending the Ukrainian conflict? And the Ukrainian conflict will end when the West stops supporting the dictatorship in Kiev. The chance is almost zero because the first question to Harris, if she accepts some kind of a deal with Russia, would be, what have you been doing during the last 2.5 years? Where did the almost $200 billion taxpayers go as new?
We're going to continue talking about foreign policy when we return. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
We need to counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Мы обычно едем куда? К бойцам нашим на позиции.
Война – это вообще такое благодатное место для того, чтобы понять, кто ты в этой жизни. Что нужно делать, чтобы остаться человеком? Чем пожертвовать ради этого?
Мама дала мне молитву свою, рукописную. Она писала ее от руки. Молитва всегда со мной. Она написана башкирским языком. Но здесь текст арабский. Альхамду лиллахи раббил галамин. Но она такая, мусульманская. Я эту молитву распечатал скажем так, в большом количестве для своих ребят и раздал, как я это вижу, это работа.
Мне кажется, у нас такой тандем сложился с Азратом. Шикарный просто. Вот сейчас мы должны быть вместе. Сейчас мы должны искать не то, что вот нас разведет в сторону, а то, что нас объединит в одно целое.
Хочется, конечно, повидаться со всеми бойцами, почитать со всеми за здоровье бойцов, за сохранность их жизни.
Как выстроен даже мусульманин, христианин. Мусульманин, христианин. Мусульманин, христианин. Слава Богу.
Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter LaBelle. Here we're discussing some real news. All right, I'm going to go back to you, George. Dima already touched upon it. Let's talk about foreign policy. This is a bit of a quandary here because, you know, we have essentially it is Cold War 2.0 focused against Russia. We have a proxy war that started under the Obama administration where Biden was vice president. Trump played his role as well, arming the Ukrainian regime. And then we have Biden with full-blown proxy war, which has gotten extremely dangerous. Now, there are obviously indications that there's war fatigue for the donor class in the West and within Ukraine. Obviously, the casualty rate is high. They're running out of men, material. And by all accounts, even friendly media towards Zelensky regime, low morale. But what does that mean if Trump comes in or Harris comes in? Explain to me what could be the difference, or is it just really part of the campaign?
Well, I think that Harris will almost certainly pursue the Biden policy. I think she will continue funding this war. I don't think she has any real ideas. I think she will just simply accept the kind of foreign policy establishment, military establishment point of view. And she might even escalate. She might even sign off on things that Biden seemed hesitant to sign off on, such as lifting all restrictions on the use of long-range missiles on Russian territory. Trump is, I think, a more interesting case because, you know, if we go back to what he really believes, I mean, you know, if we go back to, you know, back into 2000 when he first contemplated running for president, he has always been against a conflict with Russia. Also in the beginning, he thought that NATO was a real waste of money and a waste of time for the United States. 2016, he was clearly identifying that China is our real problem. It makes no sense for us to wage war against Russia, even a proxy war against Russia, when China will be the major beneficiary. And you have to think that that's what he's going to come in with. He wants to end this war because China has to be the focus of America's concern. Now, it's a different question as to whether he'd be able to pull this off. But I think that's going to be his initial goal, that to bring this war to a speedy end as possible. If, however, he fails to do that, then I can see him going the other way, which is to a massive escalation. So it's very unpredictable. But at least with Trump, there is a slight hope that he's going to just take the bull by the horns and just say, right, let me just do whatever is necessary to bring this to an immediate conclusion.
It's interesting that you mentioned China because even Trump pre-politics was all harping on China all of the time. I mean, he was really one of the first major public figures, not a political figure, but a public figure to talk about that. Dima, there was a recent interview, I think it was in the last news cycle, where Trump lamented how close Russia and China has gotten. And that echoes what George just said there, that's the prize for him. And that it may be the origins of, it would be good to get along with Russia from 2016. Unfortunately, we have Russiagate in between. I think it's almost an impossibility that he can go down that track. I mean, there's so many avenues closed off for actually both candidates when it comes to the national security state. Dima.
Well, indeed. Look, no one is promising peace. Trump, you're absolutely right. George was absolutely right to quote him. Why does he pretend to want to end the conflict between Ukraine and Russia in order to concentrate on China. So to start a Cold War, a hybrid war with China, probably a hot war over Taiwan. So no one is promising peace, even promising. That's tragic. You know, I think that if Harris comes to power, she cannot resolve the conflict in Ukraine because she is, I'm sorry, she is a culprit. You know, she was a part, at least formally a part, of Biden's policy, which led to this conflict and which exacerbated this conflict for more than 2 years. So she cannot turn back on that. With Israel, again, the United States kind of pushed it into a corner. The United States cannot abandon Israel. What happened with this pager attack was awful for humanity because it's the first use of household devices for war purposes. It's something like the nuclear weapons or chemical weapons. Suddenly, everyone becomes vulnerable to a sudden and terrible death around the globe because now we see that these things can be used against humans. Again, it's very much like chemical weapons. But the United States has, they already invented too many myths about Ukraine. They connected to Ukraine too much of their, if you want, ideological investment to leave it now. So basically, they are hostages of ideology, both in Ukraine and in Israel.
It's called the sunk cost fallacy. You're exactly right. You know, George, on the margins, but of course, right now in American politics, with the duopoly, party duopoly, margins matter a lot. And for some, and it's really quite interesting when we look at Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, genocide is on the ballot for many Muslims, Arab Americans. Who knows? That could flip the whole script. I mean, the more you look at it, at least potentially it's there. And that will have implications possibly, and I may be, hope dies last, that you will see when genocide is on the ballot, you better pay attention to the electorate. I'm thinking about a future Trump administration. I may be, hollowing in the woods here, but we'll find out if it makes a difference, George.
No, I think that's right. As the we make these calculations for election night, it's looking like Trump will carry the Sun Belt states. So it's all going to be down to the three blue wall states, the Great Lakes states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. The calculation is if Trump picks off one of them, then Trump is president. If Harris wins all three, then Harris is president. Now, of the three, they're focusing very much on Pennsylvania, but Michigan could be the sleeper there because this is a very significant. There's a very significant Muslim and Arab American population in Michigan. They've already made their feelings plain. They're very upset about the Biden administration. Now, Democrats have been saying that, oh, well, but Trump would be worse. That's always their go-to argument. Oh, well, you may not like what Biden and Harris did, but Trump would be worse. But that's not a convincing argument because I say Trump wasn't worse. You know, we had 4 years of Trump and we didn't have anything like this. You didn't have nothing.
George, it's like saying, this person has committed murder, but this guy might commit murder. I mean, that's
worse. Yeah, exactly. And he might kill two people, not just one person. You might kill two. And exactly, that's the argument. And it's not a very convincing argument. And that's why a number of these Muslim and Arab leaders have come out in support of Trump. And there may well be, again, a very rational calculation there that Trump could just come in and bring this to an end. Remember, he doesn't really need all this AIPAC and Zionist money.
Right.
He's not running.
He'll be a lame duck.
Exactly. He's done. He doesn't need Mary Madison anymore. He's in power. So he might come in and say, enough already. He doesn't have any particular attachment to Israel. I mean, it was always a kind of transactional thing. He needed the money because he's been very short of money compared to the Democrats. So once he's in power, it's quite possible that he might rethink this and think about his historic legacy as bringing peace to the Middle East.
Because he's never gotten over the fact that Barack Obama got a Nobel Peace Prize and he didn't, okay? You know, Dima, you can't talk about American presidential politics for the third cycle now without talking about Russia. So what is Russia meddling in this time around in the election? It's obvious here. Of course, I'm joking. But, you know, how does, you know, Russia see this election? Do they have a dog in this fight, or every single president is the same when it comes to American foreign policy towards Russia?
Well, I think it's a part of that huge, huge disappointing development that we had since, I think, 1987. There was really a huge chance to resolve the conflict between Russia and the United States, Russia and Europe. There was a lot of goodwill on the side of Russia. It's amazing how Russian people, despite the Cold War, probably because we were isolated from the Western media, we didn't know the full scope of hatred that existed in the United States and Europe, and even in Eastern Europe against us, we were dreaming of a better world. And in the 90s and in the 2000s, it seemed to Russians that their dream is actually realist. You know, Putin was a very realist politician when he helped the United States in Afghanistan in 2001 after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. For Putin, it looked like very, very realist move. Support them now. If we support them in Afghanistan, they are going to see we're normal people. They have much worse enemies than us. You know, look at these Islamist terrorists. Look what they did to Washington and to New York. And what was amazing was that the Americans, at least the American elite, didn't notice that. You know, they hesitated for a few days and then continued with the same policy, disregarding their own interests. Not a single Russian committed a terrorist act in the United States, not a single Serb. But the hostility towards Russians and Serbs is much greater than the hostility against the countries which were obviously connected to terrorist attacks inside the United States. Some of these countries are official U.S. allies. So we're little by little losing patience, by little becoming more and more disappointed. But there are still Russians who hope for some kind of change. And the main hope is a diplomatic solution for the Ukrainian conflict. That is what the majority of Russians
have. I've already said it on this program, hope dies last, okay? All right, this is our last program before the presidential election. I'm sure next time the three of us meet, we'll be talking about the implications, if they're not haven't stopped counting the ballots, but that is in 2 weeks' time. We'll see. All right, gentlemen, I want to thank my guests in Budapest and in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk Rules.